Good morning and welcome to Good Design. I want to tell you about my friend Matthew. Matthew is a designer, so he's pretty cool. Matthew has done things like made things for a film set. He's done things like create stuff, manufacture, solve problems, work through issues, make people happy. It's a pretty good job, probably cooler than yours. Matthew, he wanted to do something a little bit different though. He wanted to design a new lens. He realised, lenses are quite commonly used. You might even have one. You might have several in your phone right in your pocket now. You might have a telescope, a microscope. You might wear spectacles. Lenses are pretty important. So Matthew thought, I'd like to design a good one. So like all good designers, he did a Google search. Unfortunately, he was at Stewart's Point at the time, so that page is still loading. But eventually he wandered around and found out a little bit more about lenses. And he realised it's, a little bit complicated. He wants a lens to be, say, strong. But what's the problem with strong? Might be thick. It may not be as clear. He wants it to be really good quality. But what's the challenge there? Cost? Manufacturing? Specificity? He wants the lens to be self-healing. So if it gets scratched, it sorts itself out. What's the challenge there? He might need magic. He might need it to be alive. At the very least, he'd need a lot of energy, right? He'd need energy supply. He'd need things to make that work, right? So Matthew thought, this is pretty difficult. Lucky there was a little bit of inspiration, though, and he was able to think about a lens that you don't think about much, but that you may have had something to do with. These particular lenses are always 11.5 millimetres in diameter. They're always about half a millimetre thick. You have two of them. We're very good at taking them for granted. We look through them all the time. We overlook them constantly. Any ideas? The cornea. The cornea, right? Easily overlooked. You've got two of them, but you don't think about it very much. In fact, even if you're... Wait, I've got a clicker. Even if you're looking at it, you don't think much about the cornea because it's clear. It's there, rounded, doing its job all the time. And unless it's hurting you, you probably don't think about it very much. We sort of look right through to the iris, which is a phenomenally pretty part of our body. It comes in all sorts of colours depending on how much pigment there is. Sometimes the eye wants to come out with more pigment, just more melanin cells. Sometimes a lot of melanin cells. Sometimes the eye can't quite decide what colour it wants to be. But it always looks spectacular. But the challenge of the cornea is that it's a pretty tricky little part of our body, right? So it's only half a millimetre thick, 550 microns. Most of that is what gives it its strength and its structure, right? That's what keeps it strong so that it doesn't bust and it keeps our eye nice and solid. The back layer is super delicate. It's actually a layer of pump cells. And if you wreck it, like in surgery or anything like that, it's all going to go very badly for the cornea. The front's kind of clever because it's able to regenerate. Regeneration is a bit of a tricky one, right? Because what's the problem with regeneration? Needs some magic? Takes time? Yep. The front of the cornea is pretty clever, actually, because it can you can pretty much wipe off the whole lot of it and it'll grow back within 48 hours or so. So it's pretty quick, but I can tell you they're pretty uncomfortable 48 hours for people. So you need a bit of energy, right? Energy. So how do we get a lot of energy through our body? I'll give you a clue. Breathing, that gives us a special molecule. Oxygen. And oxygen is used in our body to provide energy. And how do we get that oxygen around our body? Lungs, and then the heart, and that takes the blood around the... And the blood carries the oxygen, right? So the eye's got a bit of a problem right here because you get your oxygen from your blood vessels. Now, what happens if the cornea is completely covered in blood vessels? You wouldn't be able to see. It's not very transparent, is it? You wouldn't be able to see what you're doing. There'd be all these blood vessels that you'd have to look through. So, how do you solve that? Fortunately, the cornea can get its oxygen directly from the air. It can breathe itself. So it's the only part of the body that will go, I'll just get my oxygen straight through, thanks very much. Don't worry about that blood vessel stuff. I'll sort myself out. You also need some nutrients though, right? You need molecules. You need things to make that happen. How do you get that? You can't get that from the air. There's no nutrients floating around that the eye can absorb. Well, there's this fluid behind the cornea. It's just there. It's called the aqueous humor. And it's filtered blood. So it's the clear part of blood without all the not very clear bits like the red blood cells and the white blood cells and the fiber and all those things you need in blood. So that gets cleverly filtered out. So the fluid that comes onto the front chamber of the eye is perfectly clear. If it wasn't, of course, you would have blurry vision again. Every 40 minutes, your body renews that fluid, that aqueous humor, so you've got fresh, new supply of nutrients right there behind your cornea, taking it for granted every 40 minutes. That's what we do. And then, of course, one of the main reasons the cornea is there at all is it actually supports a layer of tears. If you don't have that layer of tears, then the vision's much more blurry. If you've ever had dry eye and done a bit of these ones, that's the tears not forming this perfect, lovely lens over the front of our eye. So the cornea, strangely, is actually more of a support, a clear support for a layer of tears that turns up there at the front of our eyes, and that's what helps the light to focus really nicely through the pupil to the back of the eye. Is that kind of cool? I reckon that's kind of cool. Matthew thought, that's pretty impressive stuff. And he took up a job designing dishwasher components instead. Much more sensible. I wanted to help us think about design, because design is stuff that you all do, you know, and some of it's grandiose. Some of the stuff God's designed, of course, you know, I think, you know, it can knock your socks off, and hopefully this week we'll have a few talks where you'll go, wow, that's amazing, I did not know that. And we'll just concentrate on God's design. And then some of our talks this week will be on stuff we have to design, and hopefully they'll be relevant to you. But even if they're not specific to you, we all think about design things. And it might be simple things. It might be holding the microphone. No, it's not anything to do with microphones. It's definitely things like, can we cater? Can we welcome? Can we have a family? Can we have a house? How do we make things beautiful? How do we turn up to a church and have it look amazing and sound how we want it to sound? So hopefully we'll think about that. But it's always with some compromise, right? Design is tricky like that. The design we have to deal with always has budget. It always has time constraints. It always has resource restraints, like people. It always has challenges. It always has challenges that we have to deal with, right? And that's why we have to think cleverly and creatively about design. That's all from me. I'm going to just put on my host hat now because I'm going to introduce our next speaker. So, Connection Tent has not always existed. And this year, one of the things we wanted to do was acknowledge the origin story of Connection. And who better to ask than really old people? I mean, who better to ask than people that were there? And unwisely, Rosalie Needham put up her hand and said, yeah, I'll speak to that origin story. Rosalie was there since those earlier times. Rosalie describes herself as having dual PhDs in creativity and survival from the University of Life. She's had professional careers in event management and interior design. Around camp, she's known for generally being awesome and having the coolest caravan in the place called Piccolo Rose. If you haven't spotted that, you'll suddenly realise that's design right there. Let's welcome Rosalie Needham. This one here, you can hear. Special new. Thanks, Rosalie.
Thank you, Lloyd. Some of what he said is true. Don't remember putting my hand up, but I was here and I'm old. So, and I'm going to read my story, and it is a true story. It was the 80s, and every year, Big Camp Byron Bay was the place to be. Put your hand up if you're at Byron. There are a few oldies here, yeah. It was a popular and trendy, convenient and too often wet and muddy place to be. But for me, it was a strangely soulless experience. I was a young, quite young widow with three children, 6, 4, and 9 months old. I had a deep longing to create wonderful, lasting big camp memories for my kids, and every year I loaded up my little bomb car to bursting point and embarked on the long and perilous journey on the old Pacific Highway north from Lake Macquarie to Byron. The excitement mounting among the kids with every passing kilometre. The rain that fell on the campground was not nearly so distressing as the tears that rolled down my cheeks night after night as I sat in my bleak, leaky conference tent. No power. No radio coverage of the night meetings, just me, sitting in my bereft aloneness, watching over my little sleeping brood until it was time to rest my own lonely soul. They were very long and very dark nights. I'm sure there were countless blessings that enriched many, many others, but for me it was different, very different. Those were the days when there were only two meeting tents, apart from the children's tents, of course. The regulation big tent and the youth tent. That was it. And here I was, a 30-year-old widow, a single mother of three, desperately longing for a place where I felt a sense of belonging. So lonely in a crowd. The nights were never ending, and my days consisted of a loving mother's watch care over her children, drop-offs and pick-ups to meetings and activities. They loved and still love and are reminded of the fond memories of their camp days, However, in my daytime hours, I'd find myself wandering around the grounds just looking for something that simply didn't exist. I walked past strangers who sometimes smiled and others busy with their own agendas. I found myself longing for a place where I could simply hang, a place where I could meet someone to talk with, someone to connect with, a place for social connection regardless of their age. Behind every face, there's a unique storybook, and so often those books have deeply personal and frequently painful chapters. Awesome, a big tent and a youth tent. But where do I fit in? Where do I belong? Neither. I vividly remember this one dark night as if it was yesterday. Sorry, it's so long ago I didn't think I'd tear up, but it's still very raw, obviously. As if it was yesterday, I sat on the side of my conference bed with a flickering candle nearby, and I poured out my lonely, bereft heart to God, the same God who had sustained me through every heartbeat during all the other bleak times in my life. That night, He was the flickering candle in my dark tunnel. That night, I heard the faintest whisper in my heart, and I dared to dream what big camp could be for lonely souls like me. What it would be like to experience a true sense of belonging with authentic connection. Fast forward a few years, and the Byron Bay campground was sold, and the North New South Wales Conference had acquired new land here at Yarrahappini. Plans progressed to establish this unique facility. My personal circumstances had also changed dramatically, and I'd now remarried and inherited two extra children. The familiar old recipe of a big tent and a predictable youth tent was dutifully carried through to this new campground. Nothing changes without embracing change, it seems. However, a year or two later, a small red and white striped tent, reminiscent of a circus tent, was set up and clinically labelled the 25-plus tent. Its popularity was instant, causing many grey hairs to curl. The tent sides bulged. A long-neglected group had finally emerged from the shadows. Yay! The following year, a bigger tent canvas was needed to accommodate the burgeoning group, and my creative husband and I accepted the invitation to be part of the 25-plus committee. It was a good camp and showed that the need was real and it was pressing. At our final debrief meeting, when each of us expressed our thoughts, I took the opportunity to share my passion to have a creative meeting place in the form of a cafe on steroids. All heartily agreed, and everyone seemed to catch my vision. This would replace the existing conference tent, wherein stood a folding table, a single large tin of Milo, a 2-litre bottle of milk, all being measured into styrene foam cups with calculated precision, with the focus on minimalist precision. My husband, Carl, designed a new identity for the tent with a fresh logo and name, and connection was born. I repeat, for all of you here, and share it with your friends, connection was born, not connections. Simultaneously, the Connection Cafe burst onto the big camp stage. My mind ran wild with creativity and oceans of notions flooded my soul. No budget to work with, just lots of sheer drive and determination. Mountains of planning, sourcing and designing, and finally the dream God had placed on my heart all those years earlier was now becoming a reality. Praise God for his faithfulness. We arrived at camp 5 days prior, five teenagers, a team of willing helpers, a big trailer full of stuff and a head full of ideas, and away we went. Endless design hours went into the layout and functionality of the cafe so it would accommodate widespread needs. This was a place where anyone could meet up at any time of the day or evening, and my passion was that the doors, or in this case, the canvas, would never be closed through the day, and it would never be closed until the last person left at night, regardless of time. Respecting noise curfew, of course. And in the old days, we did even have a mild curfew. By day, it was the perfect place for a rendezvous or a cuppa with a friend. And by night, it was popularity exploded. Hours before the evening meeting, I began noticing homemade reserved signs appearing on the tables. And as soon as the last amen was uttered in the meeting next door, long snaking queues would form outside with literally hundreds waiting to join the evident good times happening inside. And there would be a mass exodus from the big tent as well. No social distancing back then. The very heart of the design was for this place to be where lonely or single people could arrive and feel comfortable to join any table and feel a sense of belonging. That was my mission. And it worked brilliantly. Those of you who weren't there, sorry, you missed out. Those of you who were, you can share. So creating the environment, of course, meant many things like styling, stage construction, reception, relaxation corner, seating, the exterior, and volunteer teams. The styling, the very first thing we did was to create the right mood, and draped 200 metres of calico over a fixed pole that spanned between the two main poles of the tent. Between the fabric and the roof canvas, we strung thousands of fairy lights, which were on all day and night, with stage lighting on musos and table lamps strategically placed. There was no need for any mood-destroying fluoros. We made 3-metre-high core flute columns to create an imposing addition to the majestic centrepiece of flowers and lilies and lily leaves, which I had created in a big urn and pedestal. The stage was a low-set platform for live music every night, and many and varied wonderful individuals or groups were carefully selected to play and sing as people relaxed with each other. The brief to the musos was that they must only be background music, as the most important thing was for people to connect with each other, and they didn't want to shout over music. The music stopped, of course, at curfew. In some lovely cane lounges were in the reflection corner, where I sourced the lounges off the side of the road, cleaned them up, recovered the cushions, and they were fantastic. A comfy spot to pick up a magazine with a cuppa and a lovely place to sit with a friend. The seating, the floor area was completely covered with a giant roll of white woven hay baling fabric, which I found in a liquidation centre. Still see some of it being used around the camp, actually, so it's quite sturdy. We have repurposed lots of folding tables from the shed and screen printed the logo on the tables. We also transported all cream chairs from Yarra to give extra flair instead of multicoloured ones. The ones you're sitting on are all modern, new. A builder friend came along with us and helped in many areas, including creating a cafe reception area, a place for people to order their drinks, which were delivered to their table in proper crockery cups and saucers, along with their cake selections, which were all supplied by a lot of conference churches and kept in a freezer at Yarra, and I ferried them backwards and forwards. In the years that followed, we charged a small fee for those eats, and 100% of those profits went to a designated fundraising project. Another activity corner was where there was a big table set up with a huge Ken Duncan jigsaw for those who would just like to sit and reflect in a quiet space. And some 3D puzzles sat there as well. So, helpers. This kind of venture certainly does take a team of helpers, and of course by that I mean unpaid, willing helpers. I commissioned 6 different churches throughout the conference to contribute, 1 team for 1 night through the week. And each church group had their own leader who I liaised with. The teams all wore black and white clothing and a black and white Connection Cafe apron. Maybe I still owe that to the conference, that apron, but it's mine. Thank you, Trudy. It worked brilliantly, and the cheery team spirit was on display in action. They loved it. The exterior, I found a few abandoned, potted, old, struggling ficus trees behind the old big shed, planted them in strategic places out front of the cafe tent, and this would add an inviting element to the exterior. Year by year, those trees were woven with fairy lights to welcome pilgrims to come on in. Loved seeing those figs still standing out there. I kiss them every year. The first year of operation was challenging and primitive. Even though it looked like the Ritz, no running water. In fact, we washed up all the crockery plates and cups in plastic tubs with a garden hose pushed under the side of the tent. Power was an issue, and often the whole campground would be in darkness when the supply was in high demand every night. One kind and generous soul who loved what we were doing hired a generator, first day, had it here, delivered, and it was planted over in the bush there just for the cafe. The cafe was often used for prayer groups and even workshops. However, one of the most memorable corporate events was when the cafe joined forces with the Connection Tent and we ran a Friday night agape feast, and wow, that was amazing. Only yesterday someone came to my cute little caravan and was still remembering that beautiful night. It was amazing. We brought in extra tables and chairs and had them flowing out under the stars amongst the fairy-lit trees, created a space for foot washing where people were invited to freely share that intimate experience at any time during the program. Each table was graced with Middle Eastern food, mountains of grapes, grape juice and hummus and flatbread, sweet and tasteful music added to the minister's words, and hearts were touched as the spirit permeated that place. God is a good God, a great God, and a faithful God. He used that dark experience in my own life to bring light to many others, and they were richly blessed. I love how he always delivers, even if it's not as fast as we'd like him to. Early one evening, I wandered outside the cafe and I noticed a lady in her 40s with her hands holding her cheeks and tears rolling down her face. And I said, "Are you okay?" And she just cried as she looked up into those fairy-lit fig trees. And in her halting Romanian accent, she said, "This is so beautiful. every day I come here and I feel so blessed. I have never seen anything so beautiful in my country. We held each other and wept as she shared her story with me and thanked God for all his goodness. There is not enough time to share all the precious stories that have come from those days, but let me say that I know many lives were richly blessed by the Connection Cafe, and I am forever grateful that God entrusted me with that responsibility and gave me all I needed, including the rough experiences prior, to encourage and bless others through my own brokenness. I want to thank God from the bottom of my heart for always showing up on time, every time, which is the perfect time.
Thank you, Rosalie, for sharing your journey. That was awesome. I love that. So last but not least, as they say, we have someone I assume most people should know by now. We have Adrian, our conference president, coming to share a bit about good design in the leadership aspect. Adrian is the conference president at the moment at North New South Wales, but he's come from Sydney after 8 years of working there. But before that, he was working with Connections Tent. Well, he was pastoring Kingscliff for 10 years and he helped out a bit at the Connections Tent, which it's pretty cool that it's circled back and he's able to share with us. So I'd like to invite Adrian up.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to come and share this morning. Rosalie, that's fascinating history. Absolutely. Thank you for being brave and bold enough to share your story. But just to see the development of this place and this division at Big Camp. Lloyd's been very brave. He has no idea what I'm going to talk about. So he's been very courageous, and thank you for the opportunity. If we could put that picture up on the screen. That picture. So the occasion was the Administrators Council just a few weeks ago, down in Melbourne. You can't always believe everything you see, but Lorraine Artu, who's the communications coordinator for the union, just said, want to get a group photo of those who were there. So we all just gathered and that was the photo. It is true that not all of the administrators were there due to COVID and isolation and so forth. There were about six or eight other individuals that weren't there in person. They joined via Zoom. But in fairness, at the moment, only one administrator in Australia is female. That's only been a recent development. There were four. Three of those four ladies have chosen for either family reasons or professional reasons to leave their roles and pursue other opportunities, other job opportunities. So we did have four female administrators. So just so everyone's on the same page, most conferences have three administrators, the president, the general secretary and the chief financial officer. Even the smaller conferences have got three administrators. So the general secretary in Western Australia was female. The Secretary Treasurer, a combination of the two roles in North Australia, Northern Australian Conference, was female. The Chief Financial Officer in Greater Sydney was female. And the remaining female is Kay Zijdeveld, who's the Chief Financial Officer in the South Australian Conference. So, not a good look. Apparently, it has generated quite a lot of comments on social media. And so forth, but would we like to see more females in senior leadership roles? Yes, we would. We do need to keep in mind that the church in Australia actually pioneered female presence in administration. If we go back to the 1980s, Mrs. Barbara Reynolds was appointed as the Secretary Treasurer of the Western Australian Conference. You know, we're talking 40 plus years ago. She then moved to the Secretary Treasurer of the what was then the Trans-Australian Union Conference, the southern part, the conferences that make up the southern part of Australia, and served the church with distinction for several decades. So females in these roles are not unusual. Would we like to see more? Yes, we would. I guess something else to keep in mind, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on the photo, and maybe we can get rid of it. Thanks, guys. We'll zoom up a little bit. We'll get in our designed we'll move up. We'll go through the lens and look at the big picture. But would we like to see more females in leadership roles? Yes, we would. But something that's important also to keep in mind is that people like myself and Abel and Russell, your administrators in this conference, we don't appoint ourselves. So in September next year, we have our next regular constituency meeting. Your churches, the churches that you belong to, will be invited to appoint one or two people to make up what is called a selection committee. Every church has an opportunity to get a person on the selection committee. Then that group of people meet and they appoint a nominating committee. The role of the nominating committee is to review our performances as officers, the departmental team and the executive committee, and to make recommendations to the constituency meeting, which we will hold here probably on this ground in September of next year. So there's quite a multi-step process to get to that point. And what would we like to see? We would like to see more females putting their hands up and considering positions of leadership within the church. Now, as it stands at the moment, females can't be appointed as conference presidents because the constitution says that the president's role needs to be an ordained pastor, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But the other two roles, general secretary and CFO, they don't need to be pastors. They can be, but it's not an essential. And so females can fill those roles. And they have done, and they will continue to do so. And we would like to see more females in those roles. So let's just zoom up a little bit in our lens and looking at the bigger picture. Women in ministry. That's where I want to spend just a few moments. We're very proud of the fact that here in North New South Wales, 11% of our pastoral staff are females, not counting chaplains in schools. 11%. We would like to see that higher, but we're working on it. Now, unfortunately, and I say unfortunately, there's at least one conference in Australia that has no female pastors at all in their field staff. So we've been working very hard to build up our female pastoral team, and we are very proud of our lady pastors. They do a great job. We have lady pastors in departmental roles and in field roles and also in school chaplaincy roles. At the moment, as you're aware, there's a distinction between the title of a male and a female pastor. Male pastors are ordained, female pastors are commissioned. Would we like to see that changed? I speak for myself, I would like to see that changed. There is some differences when you look at the church manual. There are some, unfortunately, there are some things that commissioned pastors are unable to do that ordained pastors can do. One, be the conference president. Two, ordain elders and deacons at the local church. Three, organise a local church. Four, disband a local church. The church manual at the moment says an ordained pastor must do those four things. And one of the things that we have, in fact, we've sent a recommendation through to the division and then onto the general conference that regardless of what happens in the ordination space, that female pastors, commissioned pastors, are able to ordain deacons and elders at their local churches. Because I think it's wrong that a senior pastor like Lizette at Walls End Church has to get a male colleague to come and ordain her elders and deacons. So we're working on that, and the union is very supportive of that. In every other way, male and female pastors are treated exactly the same. Same salary, same progression journey, same period of time in an internship, licensed pastor, and then through to the ordination or commissioned role. In every other way, female pastors are treated the same in this country. Now, it's not so in other countries of the world, but it is so in this country. Would we like to see that changed? Yes, we would. Would the union president like to see that changed? Yes, he would. Would the division president like to see that changed? Yes, he would. And they have gone on public record, and if you read the record, the official magazine of the church, there have been articles and commentary in those official papers supporting the fact that male and female pastors be treated exactly the same. Now, there was another thought I was going to have. Let me come back to that. Let me just check. I wrote a couple of things down here. All right, that's where I wanted to go. So what are we doing about it? The union have been very proactive in endeavouring to address the situation. So the previous union administration, Pastor George Munoz, who was the union president, a couple of times a year the union presidents all get together over at the General Conference in Silver Springs in Maryland, and they meet together. The union president, the previous union president, has made direct representation to the General Conference administration and the officers of the General Conference, and requesting that male and female pastors be treated exactly the same in this part of the world. We're not saying that other parts of the world have to do that, but in this part of the world. In terms of supporting females in ministry, the union has set up a scholarship fund to support females, financially support females, to go to Avondale and study for the ministry. The union have also appointed a half-time associate ministerial association secretary, Lindell Peterson, who's here at this campground. So Brendan Pratt is the ministerial association secretary at the union. Lindell has been appointed, half of her time is to support women in ministry here in this country across our 9 conferences. I think that's a really positive thing, because when it comes time for female graduates from Avondale College to have their interviews, the final year students, ministry students at Avondale, meet with the union presidents and the ministerial association secretary, and then they meet with the conference presidents. Those two groups, up until recently, are all male. And you can imagine if you've got the Australian Union Conference President, the New Zealand Pacific Union Conference President, and the Ministerial Association Secretary, and you're going into an interview with those three gentlemen, fairly high-powered and influential, that for a female graduate from Avondale, that could be quite an intimidating experience. Well, as of this year, Lindell was part of that interview process to support women in ministry. And we're very proud of that fact. So those particular things have been put in place to support women in ministry. Have we got further to go? Yes, we do. Would we like to see some changes? Yes, we would. Interestingly enough, the Victorian Conference, at their regular session last year, and if I let me read to you, so they did a brief survey of all of the delegates that came to their regular constituency meeting last year. This was in November. And one of the questions was, I wrote it down here, should we treat men and women equally in ministry, including ordination to ministry? So there are about 200 or so people, leaders of local churches, delegates at that meeting. 76% agreed with that statement, which I thought was quite significant. Now, yesterday at our special constituency meeting, we tried to do a survey. The technology didn't quite work, but we are going to circulate the survey to all of the delegates who were registered yesterday. And two of the questions relate to the ordination and commissioning issue. Why are we doing this? Because the union have asked conference presidents to gauge the thinking or the feeling of our respective fields in terms of the issue of ordination. What do you as members think? Would you like to see change? Would you like it to remain the way it is? Would you like it to be something else? So the union have asked the conferences, local conference presidents, to survey their respective fields and gather the data and the information and feed it back to them. Now, you would be aware, I'm sure if you keep your eye on Adventist News websites and so forth, that there are unions around the world that have made decisions that are different to the General Conference in terms of the issue of ordination. So at the 2015 General Conference session, a question was put to the delegates: are you prepared to allow divisions of the World Church to determine their own pathway in terms of ordination or commissioning of female pastors? Now, that's they're my words, not the actual words, but that vote did not get up at the General Conference. Not by much, but it didn't get up at the General Conference. The growing level of frustration in some parts of the world has led to some unions saying, well, regardless of what the World Church has voted, we are going to go down a different path. Now, that's obviously put a cat amongst the pigeons and stirred some things up, and there's been some interesting dialogue and correspondence backwards and forwards between the General Conference and these unions. There's a couple in Europe, particularly in Germany. There's three now in the United States, three unions that have chosen to go down a different pathway. In Europe, what they've said is, we're not going to ordain or commission anybody, any pastors. We're just going to have a prayer of blessing so that everyone is on a level playing field. In America, they've decided that in these three unions, they've decided that they will ordain females as well as males. So different parts of the world are doing different things. In this union, we have, at the moment, not decided to go against the wishes or the vote of the General Conference in session in 2015. Doesn't mean to say that it's not being talked about or that it may not be entertained in the future, but at the moment we've decided, or the union has decided, that we will remain where we are and continue to lobby and continue to have conversations and continue to work through the processes and continue to do whatever we can to support women in ministry, including the things that I've talked about, that the specific things that the union have put in place. Now, not everyone is happy with that. Some people would like to see the church in Australia move faster and do something similar to what the American unions have done. Others, and we need to acknowledge, there are a variety of opinions on this issue. And we don't need to go into that. You can go onto the web and read all of the research that has been done, the various committees that have done research into what the Bible says about ordination and laying on of hands and setting aside, all of those kinds of things, what Ellen White says, and different committees have come to different conclusions. So there is a range of views on this topic. And when we come to talking about design, Lloyd, you know, we have to make some decisions as a church. Which way are we going to go? For better or for worse, we have a representative form of government. We are a world church. And that world church covers people from different cultures, different countries, different understandings of Scripture, different lifestyles, all of those kinds of things. But we are a world church. And in terms of design, there is strength in being a world church. Let me give you just one brief example. very proud of the fact that the largest Protestant schooling system in the world is the Adventist schooling system, because we are a world church. In terms of Bible study and so forth, the Sabbath school lesson, the children's curriculums, the resources, all of those kinds of things, you can go to a local church here, you can go to a local church in South America or Africa or wherever, and chances are that they're going to be studying or looking at the similar kinds of things, because we are a world church. That's the design that we have adopted. And local parts of the Adventist church have to decide, are we going to continue to work as a group, or are we going to make decisions that might be a little bit different to another context or another country? That's the decision that we have to make. And we would very much appreciate your feedback and your thinking. If you were a delegate, you will get the survey that we put out yesterday. Please send that in. We are very much interested in your thoughts. So in terms of the process, and in terms of the picture, sorry, that was a bit of a long answer to a short question, but are there women in ministry? Yes, there are. Would we like to see more? Yes, we would. Are there women in leadership roles? Yes, there are. Would we like to see more? Yes, we would. But it's a process. We have to work with the process, and hopefully we can get a bit more of a balance, so that there can be, when pictures like that are taken, there can be a little bit more of a balance there. Let me just finish with one little experience. I don't have the story that Rosalie shared, but one little experience of the value of being part of this family, this Adventist Christian Church family. When I was growing up, my dad was into caravans. He used to buy secondhand caravans, fix them up and so forth. So every holiday that we went on was in a caravan. And I remember travelling from Adelaide. Adelaide was my home, and we'd travel all over the country. We had family in Brisbane. We'd often go up that way, or we'd come across New South Wales. I remember one night coming into Wagga Wagga. And we were looking, you just rock up at a caravan park, you pay your money, you get a site, whatever. Unbeknownst to us, that particular weekend or that particular time, there was a scout jamboree being held in Wagga, and there were thousands of people in town, and every caravan park and all of the accommodation was totally booked out. I'm one of five kids, so mum and dad, five of us in a little 1963 Ford Falcon with a caravan on the back. You can imagine, we've had a hot day driving, we're all restless, we're tired, we're hungry and so forth. What does dad do? He goes to a phone booth, he rings up the local Adventist pastor and said, "Is there anything you can do for us? Can you help?" The pastor said, "Sure. Drop around to the local church. You can park your caravan next to the church hall. We'll run a lead into the hall. You can have power. You can use the toilets and so forth at the church." And even though that was a long, long time ago, it still sticks in my mind. A very small illustration of being part of the family of God, and how when there is a need, we help each other. And I'm grateful and very proud to be part of the Adventist church family. Is it perfect? No. No way. Have we got things to learn? Can we do things better? Yes, we can. But let's, even though we might have different ideas, we might think differently, we might want to see things move faster or slower, whatever it is, that's fine. Let's have a respectful conversation with each other. Let's respect each other's opinion, even though it might be different from mine. And let's continue the journey, because God has given us a work to do. The design that we have within the Adventist Church organisation, it's what we have. It's a representative form. Everyone has a chance to have a voice. I think that's a good thing. A dictatorship would be great. A dictatorship is much more efficient. But who wants to live in a country with a dictatorship? Thank you very much.
I think we can be grateful for Pastor Adrian to talk to that topic and to be thorough in that analysis. The church is big from top to bottom, and a lot of what I do is just such a you know, lowly children's Sabbath school level or whatever it might be. And many of you, that's probably true. And it's interesting to hear the you know, the bigger picture of that story. Some of you will agree. There's probably, you know, we'd love to see that design differently. And we appreciate that people like Pastor Adrian are going to speak to that. We're not doing Q&A. I know you'd like to yell at him and stuff, but we're going to save some time. Pastor Abel, who's the General Secretary of our conference, he's here as well. Pastor Adrian has allowed some time. So if you did have things to talk with him, either of those gentlemen, about, please do. You've got time after this program. We're going to wrap things up. So tomorrow, Good Design's on again, 9:40. We'll start on time. We have some excellent speakers. Maddy Voynier, he's SPD, South Pacific Division, Big Cheese there. He's going to talk about creatives and creativity in ministry. So some of you, you know, can do regular churchy-looking things like talk about the dragons and beasts and stuff. But some of you, that's not how you minister. And Maddy recognises that that's a thing, and he's going to speak to things like that, that we can creatively minister our gospel. We also have Big Camp's most popular speaker, Darren Morton. He's going to be here tomorrow, and he's going to be talking about health, lifestyle, medicine, things that he is guru on. And one more speaker as well. We're just working that out. Now, the rest of the today, just so you know, rest of today, there are other workshops that you should definitely tune into. Have a look at your booklet, the website, if you've got any internet. There's things that use the space. So there's a workshop in the cafe at 11. There's a workshop here in the afternoon on health. These are not connection things, but they use the space, and please come along. They'll be good, I'm sure. I'd also love to point out what women's ministries are doing. They're doing some great things over in their tent. They have a workshop this afternoon at 2. That's a women's only one, and it's on SE. It should be really good. And then tonight, back to connection things, 7 p.m. How about last night's service? Oh, whew. So good. Tonight we have Pastor Adam Schultz preaching. He's Walls End Church pastor, and he'll bring it, and there'll be plenty of other fun and just the unbelievably good worship music that hopefully you've been loving here at Connection Renew Night programs. Thanks so much for coming. Hope you've got something, learned something from today. Thank you.